All right, we're live, so we're officially called the meeting to order, I guess. All right, so first thing on the agenda is the consent agenda. I guess I'll leave a motion to approve the consent agenda, which is the approval of the regular meeting minutes from June 18th, and then obviously in July, we had no meetings, so.
I make a motion to approve the minutes.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Have a motion and second to approve the consent agenda. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All right, regular business. Do you want to, is this you, Katie?
So we have talked previously about storage definitions, and we have some storage issues around in our industrial areas and concerns. And with Orbis leaving, we did not want to get into any issues with storage, outside storage being a problem. So we felt like this was a great time to take a look at how we can tighten up our outside storage. So basically, I have written a definition, and you can see on this handout in your packet that I've written a definition at the top and just given an overall, you know, what outside storage means, and then what it, the areas that shall comply. So accessory use, location, and this just adds this into our industrial, and it only goes into I-1 and I-2, so this just applies to I-1 and I-2. Typically with those areas, what we have for, I guess, screening would be that you can screen everything, so there's no really outside storage. You can leave things out in the open. And the only protector for the public site is just putting a screen around it. This would actually require that you keep your materials, or you stage your materials, your project equipment, vehicles, supplies. This would require you to put it into like an enclosed area of some sort. So even if it's a shed or something of that nature, you would need to keep it enclosed somehow. So it would be to not allow it to be out in the open where it could fly around if it's small debris. If you had stacks of pallets or wood or that kind of thing, you would need to keep all of that pretty much enclosed with this definition. I have added it to in two places. So I've added it to definitions, which is in Article 2, and it goes in alphabetical order. I'm going to skip through here because I have the entire Article 2 in here. Which it goes into outside storage, which means the placement, keeping, or staging of materials, that type of thing. And it has to be in an... So this identifies that the outside storage has to be kept enclosed. I'm looking for, it says unenclosed, but needs to be kept in an enclosed area. If you're in the industrial area of Osage City, so any I-1, I-2 area, which would be Asset and Orbis, and I think there's another purple area up there and a couple of pink areas, kind of purple and pink back there on your map of our I-1 and I-2. So it needs to be, it says unenclosed, but it needs to be adjusted to an enclosed area. So there's that piece. And then in addition to the definition, I added it to Article 15, which is industrial districts, and put it as the last excerpt where it would need to be enclosed. So basically the containment of loose materials would need to be, we need to contain it. And that's kind of our issue that we have going on right now. So your, the accessory use, outside storage must be clearly accessory to the primal. Industry use located on the same property, the location, it's got to be to the side or to the rear of the principal structure. It can't encroach on any front yard or in the setback unless otherwise approved through the site plan. Screening, the storage areas still have to be screened from public view by a solid fence wall, you know, year-round vegetated buffer, not less than 6 feet in height. Your containment of loose materials, all loose materials must be securely contained in bins, bins with covers or otherwise combined to prevent wind dispersion, runoff, or scattering onto adjacent properties or public right-of-ways. And then the maintenance is the outside storage must be kept clean, orderly, manner, free of debris, weeds, conditions that can constitute a public nuisance or hazard. And then, of course, any hazardous materials or related substance must be stored in compliance with all applicable federal, state, and local regulations, including the containment and spill prevention requirements. That is what I have updated for the outside storage. Anybody have any questions over that? Do you want me to add to it? This is just kind of a first stab at it. I did visit with our city attorney. He thought the language was okay. He approved it. But I don't know if we want, if you have any additional suggestions. We don't have to approve it tonight. We can think about it. We can, you know, table it and think further on it. I'm just trying to get something in place.
Before we start having a tenant.
Before we have a tenant. And then also this would require anybody that is not in compliance with this, come into compliance with it. And we would have to give them a time allotment, like, you know, a reasonable time allotment.
That's what I was trying to just think through, is practical implications for people who are already in those zones. I mean, mm-hmm. like the salvage yards would be in there, the obviously the stuff that's at it.
Asset.
And then Orbis. Well, questions, thoughts, discussion, I guess. I'm still digesting a little bit here.
I think this covers a lot of what we talked about at the previous meeting, so I'm happy with it. I don't see a problem other than the existing, some of the people that are,
How much in compliance would have to happen, or, you know, like...
They would have to come into compliance.
Yeah.
We would have to, we could give them, you know, I don't know what is reasonable, we'd have to work with them. When I visited with the league, that's what they said we'd have to do. We can definitely require who's out of compliance. We put this in, we just send them a letter and let them know, you know, the regs have changed, and then begin conversations about how are you going to get yourself into compliance. Mm-hmm. So... And how long will it take, do you think? And we'd have to work with them on that piece of it. But at some point in time, they would need to, you know, we'd have to put a timeline on them and they would have to come into compliance with it.
Well, I appreciate you, Katie, you and your team working on this, because I know, like you said, we talked about what this was going to look like, having some teeth now to at least stand on now. That, like mm-hmm. you said, we can now work to bring that into compliance. And it's not just, you know, I know that we were exhausting other efforts now. So,
right.
Yeah.
And I definitely don't want to rush this through or anything. I want to sit to really think about this and make sure this is, you know, it hits on everything that we, you know, want to do moving forward.
Is this going to be in the paper, or somebody knows, the public knows about it, or some of these?
I'm not really, I mean, we would have to, when the, I haven't gotten that far as to look to see after the governing body adopts it, what type of notice that would need to be. But we would definitely, anybody that's affected by this zone, we would have to send out letters and let them know that the
the regulations have changed and, you know, and let them know if they don't meet those regulations or that type of thing, that they would have to come into compliance and to basically, you know, work with us to figure out how they're going to get there.
So these places, how they come, how do you come about to clean them up or do whatever you need to do to that area?
So we would expect them to come into compliance, and then if they don't, we would have to get the governing body to basically decide that they weren't meeting code or standards, and so we would have to basically pass a resolution to go in and abate the situation.
Fines, all that sort of stuff would
we
be.
We could go
on
fines. We could go through municipal. You can go two routes. You can go through municipal court, or you can go through just abating the situation, which you still any amount of time, equipment, cleanup efforts, anything, disposal, that would all be charged against the property. We would send them a bill, and if they didn't pay the bill, then we would assess it to their to the tax roll, to the property taxes.
Oh, good. Yeah. There's some getting cleaned up around town. I know that. I see the trucks go by my area out there. So there, yeah.
For it to be officially adopted in like the city code, does that have to go like does the city council approve it after we do? We make a recommendation
make
to the
recommendation
council. In other words,
council.
But just it's just that. Okay, making sure.
Yep.
Yeah,
you'll make a recommendation to the council, and the council will review it and then decide to adopt it, so they can adopt it. They can suggest changes and then send it back to planning and zoning and then go through the process again. They can do one of those, or they can reject it and not adopt it at all and keep our regulations the way they are.
Equipment, machinery, vehicles, or in an enclosed, go over what enclosed means again, not unenclosed, but in an enclosed area, like has a roof and whatever, or like behind, as long as it's behind a 6-foot fence.
Pretty much loosely, my intent was to loosely word that, so it could be behind a fence, it could be an enclosed area, that kind of thing, so that all this equipment isn't sitting out. All over. I mean, that is also unsightly, I mean, if you have tons of equipment sitting out.
We'll put you behind there, just to read at least some parameters around
enclosure efforts. And maybe you need to look at that, the enclosure piece of it. Maybe it's not all the equipment. This is just a first take at how can this all go wrong for us, and how do we keep it a little bit under control? And even if they put it like to the back of their property where you can't see it, it's just trying to keep it orderly and maintained.
Cool. Appreciate you doing all this.
So, Katie, in the case of Orbis, for some reason, a year from today, those trailers are all still sitting like they are. I don't know what you call the back of their property, the way that sits.
That's what I was there.
Because the back to me is up against the railroad tracks, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
But I know they stack pallets down on that south end.
Or to the yard waste place.
I mean, would that be to clean that up? They would have to move those.
Yeah, they would have to move those. That would require you wouldn't be able to leave like all of that, and according to this. You would not be able to leave all of that sitting out front. You would need to either enclose it or, put it somewhere. So, they would have to build a fence and put it behind the fence or something of that nature. I mean, you're still going to be able to see above with those trailers, but, they would have to somewhat take care of that. Yeah, that would not comply. And that's one of the things we have to, we have to think about all the things.
Yeah,
we definitely don't want a detriment to business. But we also want to make sure that it's clean and orderly, too.
Because none of those are fenced now, right? Like, those trailers are kind of...
Well, they're...
In the front.
Like 5-6-foot chain link fence.
Right.
I worry about them over there because some of the kids linger.
The kids. Yeah.
And, God forbid they'd be over there playing and one of them come down on them.
Yeah.
Where are you at here?
Or somehow get some
right
back
there, you know where the school bus barns are?
Yeah.
Right straight across from there.
I don't think there's a fence
on 4th Street.
Yeah.
They have.
It's kind of that, just that.
I don't know, what would you say sitting in there now? Six, 10 of them?
Yeah, units.
I assume they're all empty box trailers.
Oh,
And they're not the best looking trailers.
So Orvis has them?
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised they're leaving them there. I mean, you'd think they would have cleaned them up or something.
Think.
Well, I think like Katie said, this gives us some teeth to at least stand on to hold people accountable or groups that aren't maintaining, then that we can have some order to some of these properties and then going forward here in some kind of fashion.
So where are you guys at on it? You would think we ought to, you want to read through it and then kind of take action next meeting, digest it a little more? Or do you guys feel good about where we're at and want to make the recommendation that we, I mean, those kind of are our options, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can.
I don't have any edits I can think of right
now. Think about it, you know, go around and visit the areas that are I-1 and I-2 to look to see, you know, is this going to harm what we have going on? You know, or is this going to do what we need it to do? And we definitely want to make sure we're not being a detriment to businesses. So we're trying to find that balance where we're attractive to businesses, but we also require that they keep their area, you know.
They're accountable for keeping it cleaned up.
I'm glad you have to tell people to clean up the place.
I know.
They ought to be proud of what they have.
I mean, exactly.
People don't care. A lot of people don't care.
Do we need a motion then to table this one? Then to be able to
if we're going to table, I don't know if we need a motion. If we want to take action, for sure we do. If we want to approve the addition of the current language, or if we want to.
You might want to.
Motion to table too.
Motion to table, so at least we have it in the minutes and we know that. What we're doing and what the next steps are, other than it may look like it just died.
I gotcha.
Yeah. I will make a motion to table then to our next meeting and allow us to continue to review the language and finalize it and have a chance to review further.
There's a motion made to table this until and put on the agenda for the next meeting. Any
second.
Second. There's been a motion made and second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passed. All right. I think this is better than a great start. Like, this has gone a long way. So thank you for being out. I agree.
Yeah.
It's, work out. It's not an easy thing. It's like Ken and Jello. But
the mission's still on the right path.
All right. Second item, planned unit development, overlay preliminary application. So
I do have handouts. So you will have three handouts. Two of them are going to look like this. At the very top, it's going to have project information. One is going to say Osage City Legacy, which has to do with 13th and Brandt, the corner of that. And then the other one is going to be Huffman 2 Block 1. I know it's going to be the Huffman edition. And this is all where we have the moderate income housing grant and housing being put in those areas by Heartland Design and Build Joseph Thomas, and he is here to talk to all of you and kind of give you an overview about what he's trying to do. You also have another handout that looks like this. It's highlighted in yellow, and this calls out letting you know, because under his both of these applications, under development standards and modifications on the first page, he is requesting a deviation. So maximum lot depth of residential lot shall not exceed 3 1/2 times the lot width. This article that's highlighted, this is our requirement in planning and zoning, our zoning regulations, which is Article 4, C here, that says that we require the maximum depth of residential lots not to exceed the 2 1/2 times. So with this application, he's asking to modify that requirement for these applications. And basically, it's so that he can fit, his lots are gonna be skinnier you know, and length, if it's going to be long, they're going to be longer, I mean skinny and long, basically, is how.
And that's in both locations, right? The Huffman
location. In both locations, both 13th and Brandt, and then also the Huffman Edition, which is on the west side of Wall Street. And then, Joseph, if you want to talk to them? Okay.
You're good? Yeah, again, I'm Joseph Thomas from Heartland Design Build, working with the city to fulfill some of the, you know, the requirements for the Moderate Income Housing Grant that the state was awarded. And again, that's an award that was made to the city as a municipality, and then we're kind of the contractor fulfilling that, the build-out portion. And then we also had an award for Kansas Housing Investor Tax Credits as part of that. So two of the big pieces, you know, the just take a step back. Moderate Income Housing Award, it was, we had to specifically say we're going to build these type of units or these exact units at this exact address with this kind of general layout. And so when we put in the application, you know, we don't have to have everything platted, but we had to show control of the land, which we were able to show through options. And then kind of what sort of houses and whether we were going to do rental or owner occupant. And so with the Moderate Income Housing Grant, we put in for and again, we collectively put in for the 6 owner-occupant homes to be built at 12th and California, and then 9 rentals to be built, 5 at 13th and Brandt as single-family detached homes, 2 at 626 and 632 Prospect as single-family detached homes, and then a duplex at 33 Main. And we've already been through, we have the conditional use permit already approved previously. I've been, you know, several months ago for that for 33 Main, and then we have the 2 at on Prospect are well on their way, probably about a month away from being done. And then I'm sure you've probably seen some of the work at the Huffman Edition. We were able to, before doing the plan unit development, the replat, we were able to start on one since it was on an existing buildable lot on the far north end. So that'll be the first person that'll, you know, be in there as a new home in the next 2 months. So one thing, probably why a planned unit development for both of these. One, it's really the option in the zoning code, I think, that makes the most sense, because like with Prospect, that was one lot that we were able to do a lot split on. So the zoning, you know, code allows for a lot split, which is just take one lot, you're only allowed to split it into no more than 2 lots. And so once you go above that, you're really kind of talking about, you know, sort of subdivision standards. You know, the difference being these 2 parcels they don't need any infrastructure. You know, we don't have to put any roads. Roads are all there. We don't have to put in any additional utilities. Other than at 13th and Brandt on the site plan, you'll see we've been talking with the city and Dale about putting in a new sanitary sewer main along the back of all 5 of those properties, because the only sanitary main is on Brandt Street on the north, and all those 5 rentals are all going to face east. And so rather than having like trying to have individual tie-ins or get into some private communal sewer main, we're going to install a main, put in a manhole at the back, and then run and connect to a new manhole that'll be on Brandt. And then you know, we'll install that as part of the cost of the project, and then we'll, you know, build it to the city standards, and then we'll have it inspected, and then we'll dedicate that over to the city, and then we'll permanently record a 20-foot wide utility easement in there in case that needs to get in and be maintained at any point in the future. For the planned unit development, it basically allows for, and we've done this in Ottawa as well, which is a similar kind of code language. It basically allows us to say, to come in and say, we want to plat this piece of property, and we generally want to conform with all of the regular requirements of the city code, except for we want to make, you know, these 1 or 2 little changes. And if you read kind of the precursor in the, like, chapter 16, I think, is where your planned unit development is, it says that the reason for the planned unit development in the code is to allow you know, new or innovative uses of land, taken into account, like the best, getting the best value, best bang for the buck for the land. And so what really drove us to do a planning unit development and even need an exemption at like 12th in California is that the lots on the west side of 12th are extremely deep. They're 224 feet deep. So they're, you know, they're standard, even in the replat, they're standard city lots, like the four in the middle are 75 feet wide and the one on the corner is 90 and the one on the far end is 84 foot nine. So they're still really normal lots. It's just that because they're so stinking deep, that kind of kicks us above the 2.5 ratio and makes us go to 3. And so we'd need an exemption or a variance on that piece. But you know, just to give you an idea, like in the neighborhood across the street, a couple of the houses, they have a little bit wider frontage of like 112 feet, I think, but they only go 135 feet deep. So their total lot area is just barely over 15,000. And the lot area for the middle lots is 16,800. So they're still gonna be larger lots than actually what's in place for most of the rest of the people in the subdivision. It's just that they'll have more of their area in the back instead of their side yards, which, you know, to me, that's, well, I'd rather have more land in the back of my house than on the side. So to me, it's kind of a plus. And so, yeah, this just allowed us to get 6 units in instead of the existing plat is platted as 4 lots. So, and then the home that's under construction at the far north end of the block, that's the actual footprint of it. The other two, the other 5 are kind of representative samples. And again, these, all 5 of these as part of the moderate income housing program are to be owner occupant homes. So consistent with, you know, as far as I know, I think all the houses out in that neighborhood are owner occupant. So consistent with the neighborhood, still R1 zoning. We're not requesting a change in zoning. So I think that's kind of it on that piece. Probably the only other differences on at 13th and Brandt, really the variance just comes into, you know, we're gonna have the 5 rental units face the east and we're giving them a 130 foot deep lots, and still the smaller lots are 57 feet wide, which gives you 7,410 square feet per lot, which is still a pretty good size, you know, city lot. And then the corner lot's 9,360. With that piece of property, the western half is entirely timber and kind of wood, and there's an old farmstead or farmhouse back in there with a few small outbuildings. we didn't want to just take all these lots that faced east and make them 300 feet deep. And so we thought, well, let's try to make these 2 lots here something that could be buildable in the future. Like I've had one person that is looking as an owner occupant that wouldn't qualify for the moderate income housing program, but is looking to build in the city. And so, you know, we've talked about this being an option. So that's the reason for those 2 lots. They're just kind of pegged for the future. Just leaving that open as a possibility of something that could be done. And in the planning unit development with the plat that we would record them as 2 separate lots. One, a 75 foot wide lot that would be to the west, and it's 300 feet deep.
So those are out of the 2.5, right?
Out of the 2.5 acres.
They're more than 2.5 times.
Yeah.
Because they're long actually wooded lots, not the actual ones at the houses.
No, okay, not the ones at the houses. Yeah, just the long wooded lots. Okay. And I actually need to make that correction. Should actually, instead of 3.5, it should say 4:1, because that one on the west lot's 75 wide by 300 feet deep. And then the next lot, it's 95 feet wide, because we're basically wanting to make it 75 feet wide buildable. And then we're going to record the 20-foot utility easement on their property. So they'll get extra land, but they can't build on a 20-foot strip because of the sewer main. And if we built a home on there, they would tie into that sewer main as well. So, but we wouldn't, even though we're doing single family detached on the east side, we wouldn't change the zone. This is currently zoned R3, so we wouldn't propose to change that. We'd just keep that in place in case in the future there was, you know, a reason to come in and try to do a higher density construction on those 2 lots. You know, we'd probably replat them, combine them, and then do something on there, which would still be consistent with the neighborhood, because you have real, you know, high density in the property immediately south, and then kind of catty corner over to the west. So I think that's all I have, and kind of why we're arriving at what we did and how we ended up at a planned unit development instead of like a full subdivision, because it doesn't really warrant that since we're not putting in roads and, you know, all that. So I guess if there's any questions, I'm happy to take them.
Anyone around the table got anything?
I was going to ask on the Huffman addition, so that the house that's under construction on the north end, is it so it doesn't fit specifically within lot 47 as it's marked on the other map, right?
Lot 47.
Well,
is that the original lot?
The original lot was like 47, 48, 49, and 50 as you move south out of starting at Ellenwood and kind of coming out towards California.
Yeah, so it was laid out that, you know, in the event that the planned unit development wasn't approved or there was something, it's still on that lot.
Only other thing that came to mind with the long deep lots, like there isn't, so like if somebody has a big backyard, like one of the conceivable things is, I'll put a big building in my big backyard, but will they have access to it as narrow as those lots are, or would they, it's hard for me to.
Sure. Yeah, really, 75 feet is still pretty wide. Like most of the houses that we'll probably build here in the price point that this will probably be, will be like a 48 to 50 foot wide house with a 2-car garage. And so the city required setbacks, side yard setbacks are 7 feet. So we could technically have a 61 foot wide house, but we'll probably only have about a 50. What I normally advise people is to always, even though code minimum is, or the city minimum is 7 foot side yard setback, I try to tell people no matter which way we shift on your lot, try to keep at least 10, so that in the future you ever need to get a truck or maintenance, you have access to drive along. And normally what I advise people is, you know, we'll kind of shift the driveway, and if they ever think they want to be able to have a road that, you know, or a drive that would go along the side of the garage back to an outbuilding, I try to, you know, talk through that with people, for sure.
Okay. Yeah, because with these being owner-occupied, presumably at some point they would have, like, full control right over
whatever
they do there. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, and the two homes that we're building out there, both those people plan on putting, they don't plan on putting full outbuilding sheds, or full outbuilding, like, garages, but they plan on putting pretty big sheds back there.
Gotcha.
And so, yeah, I definitely try to work with people to make sure we keep that in mind, especially because it is so deep. Like, you want to...
Right.
Yeah, you want to be able to utilize that.
I was going
to say, and lots of people want to be able to have a shop or something,
kind of, yes.
Or some place to store it, better than an RV.
But
yeah, there should be plenty of room.
That's what I want.
Yeah, you have to get to the furthest house to the north that's not part of the MIH. That's a big house with a 3-car garage. That's a 72 foot wide plan.
Gotcha.
You know, that wouldn't fit on these lots. I guess it would fit on the corner, but it wouldn't fit on the interior. But generally, I'd see a little bit smaller homes fitting there.
That makes sense. That was the only thing I was worried about, is sort of down the road.
Yeah.
Don't want to be something you can't access behind it.
Yeah. And theoretically, like, if the lot ratio was a problem, you know, we could cut off the back of all these lots, but the problem is all the utilities are back there. So, so we kind of really need to keep the full depth of the lots, of the 224 on the Huffman addition.
On the Brandt addition?
Yeah.
Are you going to take out all those trees and all the brush and everything in the back, on the west side of?
No, not right now. That's not our plan. Our plan is to try to, we'll have to take out a little bit for the first and second lot coming off of Brandt, because there's that trees jut out, but the kind of the far, like especially the far two south units, We had that staked by the surveyor before the leaves came on, and that's basically right to the back of those trees, so we won't pull those.
Isn't there a couple buildings in their house?
No, that's really, there's a little, like a small kind of egg shed, and it's a little like, there's an outhouse, and there's like a doghouse.
You never know,
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, there's some small little things that we'll eventually take out.
Mrs. Cozad lived there years ago.
Yeah. So we'll... Because I think somebody that would be drawn to one of these, you know, which is the people we were talking to, they wanted those trees, you know, so we would be, you know, we'd be selective about how we'd lay out the house, and I'd try to be pretty, I hate cutting down big mature trees.
Well, those woods back there, you want to clean those up a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, and we'll clean out some of the underbrush when, this winter, we plan on kind of getting in there with this, because it's actually, once you get back off the road, it's actually old growth forest where there's big expansive areas of, you know, open space between pretty mature trees. So yeah, we definitely plan on getting in there and cleaning some up. Yeah, we'll kind of, I know there's a, like a pear tree in there that would, you know, really like to leave, if it makes sense. But yeah, certainly as we try to do something there, try to make use of leaving those mature trees.
Yeah.
And even potentially site a house to make sure that we don't have to bring down anything. Now, there are, as far as I've seen, there's some really old ones along the fence line to the south. There's nothing in the middle that's like 120 year old oak or anything, but it's still probably 50, 60 year old tree.
Yeah, I think it's probably been 45 years since that house
somebody was there.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll definitely be, because it's a nice piece for everybody there, you know, including the people that would be on 13th to just leave quite a bit of trees there. So just got to kill out a lot of poison ivy. There's some huge poison ivy back there.
That's pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, some of the vines are like this big, and they have vines that stick out like 12 to 15 feet that look like their own tree.
I would get poison ivy just talking about it.
Yeah, that's the way I am too. That's why you got to get rid of it.
Not a fan. Okay, so what other questions? Do these need to be handled as separate, or can they all be contained in one motion?
I think you need to do them separately, because you're going to need a public hearing for each application.
Each one. Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
Okay, so essentially what we need is a motion to approve the application, and then a second motion for a public hearing on each one. So is it two or just one? Well, actually, we're not really.
You're not really, you can't really
approve it until, yeah.
Yeah,
that's why I just thought of that after it came out. Okay. That's what happens when you get the vice chair in here.
You
gotta know what's going on. He's just trying to make it through the
meeting. You're doing good,
guys. Thanks. Okay, so we need a motion on each one. So I guess we'll start with the Huffman.
You want to figure out your date? You can do the public hearing, because it's not on, it's going to be past your regular planning and zoning next month. It's going to be after the 19th.
Oh, because.
So
we have to move our regular meeting to the.
So you want to move your meeting, cancel that one, and move your meeting to the next.
Otherwise, you're looking at sitting on it for 60 days, right?
Yeah, just, and we've got a lot of. So once we set the public hearing, then we approve the application, then we've got a good. Then we got to come back, I think, for a final, and there's a lot of hoop jumping through all of this.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, I don't, what would that next Monday be, the 20th, or the next Wednesday? I guess we don't have to do it on a Wednesday.
It would be the 24th.
Yeah.
Would be your next one, if you want to do it on a Wednesday.
I don't particularly feel married to Wednesday, but I think it's just easier to probably keep it on Wednesday.
Wednesday's better for me, too, with all the grandkids.
High school activities start up. Yeah, okay, that's fine with me.
So,
this is getting messy now. So, do we need to officially cancel? We don't need a motion to cancel this meeting, right?
I think you actually do. Yeah, you
move the regular meeting from September, from the 17th to the 24th.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's step one.
Step one.
I suppose, assuming we're going to go down the path of. So,
yeah.
I would entertain a motion to cancel the meeting on the 17th and move it to the 24th of September.
I'll second that.
All right. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed? All right, so that is moving. Now we need somebody to make a motion related to the planned unit developments for Huffman and the Osage City Legacy at 13th and Brandt, as far as the setting a public hearing for the meeting on the 24th.
So is it for a public hearing?
At 7 p.m., yeah. So for a public hearing on September 24th at 7 p.m. for the Huffman 2 Block 1 project. Is that your motion?
I make a motion.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right. One down. All right. We need the same thing for the Osage City Legacy 13th and Brand for a public hearing on September 24th at 7 p.m.
I agree. Yes.
I'm concerned Morris made the motion. Do I have a second?
I'll say second.
I have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Thank you, guys. Sorry about that. All right, so we have a meeting in a month and a couple days from now. Actually, like right at, right?
Almost.
Yeah, almost. Yeah, in a few days. Anyway, all right, that's it, right? All right, we went way long tonight. I don't know who to blame for that. Probably Katie, but
this is like a new record.
We don't, there's no bonus pay, so I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
I'll make a motion.
Right,
that we adjourn it.
All right. Motion made and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Yeah, I'll make a motion. We'll make
He just wanted to sit over there and smack that gavel.
I think he's going good for Casey.
I think your bonus today is getting to spend more time with staff.
That's true. I mean, there's smiles on a lot of faces in here, so we didn't, it wasn't a bad day. I'm not saying it wasn't good, but it wasn't bad. Thank you guys for real.
Thank you, everybody.
Katie, thank you.
Yeah.
Appreciate what you're doing.
Are you good, Joseph?
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, we'll see you in a month.
Thanks for getting those in. All right.
I just kind of